Victoria Melle. I do not play Lex Luthor on Smallville. Always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Sold to Smallville, Patreon edition. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I have four very special guests yet again. My top 10 episodes of Smallville panel, I have Mr. Lance Laster, Ms. Victoria Male, Mr. Matt Truex, and Mr. Matthew Rocco. What's up, everybody?
Good. How are you?
Hello, hello.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, everybody.
You can all talk at the same time. It's fine.
We're all just so polite.
We're talking about our number 9 episode as voted by you, the fans. And our number 9 episode is the pilot. It has no title. You know, that is kind of lazy. Much like the finale has no title. Kind of lazy. But what are you going to do? Right? They didn't know. I guess I would have called it, if I were to call it anything, I would have called it Genesis, just because there's an episode called Exodus, and let's just get all the books of the Bible in there. Revelation. That's a title they never used. Shocked. Job. Could have used that. I don't know. That's another one.
Deuteronomy.
It fits right in. Yeah, there you go.
Deuteronomy.
Numbers.
Doesn't Matthew have a book? I know stuff.
There he is. So, we're talking about the pilot of Smallville. 2001, it came out. I didn't watch it when it first aired, because who knew about Smallville? Lance did.
I sure did. I saw an ad for it in a comic book, and then I was just like, ooh, this looks awesome. And so I made a whole night of it and everything. We ordered pizza and all this other stuff, because it's a school night, right? But we made it a special occasion, and I saw the first episode and I was hooked.
Yeah, Lance and I weren't really friends then, so I was not invited to this pizza party. Nor was I aware that Smallville was a TV show. As you all have heard me say many times, I picked it up in reruns halfway through the first season and carried on from there. But you know, we can just kind of go around and kind of talk about our first impressions of the pilot. Lance had his. Victoria, what's up with your first taste of the Smallville pilot?
Of the pilot? Okay, so it's actually really funny because this just remembered, I just had a very intense flashback of how I first discovered the show. Because I started watching when the fourth season aired, and I didn't start aired on the WB, and I didn't, and then I was doing this weird simultaneous catch up via ABC Family, back when it was ABC Family, when they had just put Smallville into syndication on that channel. That's when I started watching it. And I remember that there was a marathon. They were doing a marathon because they were introducing the show to the channel, and I watched the pilot and Metamorphosis back to back.
As you should never watch the pilot without Metamorphosis, that's my opinion.
I can't remember if I'd already seen the beginning, the first episode of if I'd seen Crusade already, if I'd seen the beginning episode of season 4, I can't quite recall. But I just remember it was a Smallville marathon. It was the days before DVR, and all I wanted to do was watch Smallville. But my mother was we need to go shopping to buy you a nice outfit for your father's charity golf outing that he puts on every year to help children with AIDS. And I was no! And I literally was dragged.
Oh, boy.
One of the Matts is from New Jersey. He might know this reference. I had a 6-hour meltdown at the Freehold Mall that day. I was an angel child.
God, I forgot how close we are.
I was the most well-behaved child, but this was a real low point for me.
Oh my God.
I was just having a meltdown in the mall, at an age that I was 12. I was too old to have a meltdown like that.
Yeah, I was going to say 12 was a little, 12 was a little old for that, Victoria.
Yeah. It didn't stop me. And But that's so funny.
Oh my God.
And my sister was being an angel, and she was asked by the Nordstrom sales department to be in a child fashion show, and I'm just crying in a corner. I'm not watching Smallville.
Well, that's a hard story to top there. But Truex, you're up. What's your story with the pilot?
Yeah, so I vividly remember I was watching, I was 11 or 12, watching reruns of OG Sabrina on the WB over the summer.
Oh, Melissa Joan Hart, my first childhood crush from Clerks 6.
Fair enough. Lana Lang, myself. But no, there was a, I'm going to say, 10-second teaser commercial on the WB. And it was just the first couple shots of the kryptonite and the ship and the meteors all going to Earth. And all it said was Smallville and like Lois and Clark podcast, right? Like small, like if it didn't happen to Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain, it didn't happen to Superman as far as I was concerned at like 10 or 11. But I knew the name Smallville. Yeah, exactly. So that just like, I remember I didn't stay up to watch it because I was young. But the next day after school, I sat and I watched those two episodes and was just blown away. It was kind of the first time I'd seen a new take on Superman. I'd grown up with a bunch of different Batmans, but never seen it. Like I said, if it was Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher, if it wasn't them, it didn't happen till this show. But just blew me away. I watched it today. It's one of the best pilots I've ever seen in my life. I watch it. It's evergreen. It's just the coolest thing.
All right, Rocco, what about you? Where did you first see pilot?
So I've shared this before on your podcast in regards to the show. Actually, my first experience with Smallville was not the pilot. I think it could. So I remember very vividly my thing was like my mom was watching the show before I was, and she had like this little TV, you know, those little mini TVs like that, a little small thing in the kitchen, and she would like make dinner and stuff. And just like you guys, I was, you know, like 12, I think, maybe like 13 or 14, probably 13 or 14. But yeah, so it was like she would be watching the show, and I knew nothing, absolutely nothing, not like you guys. I knew zero about Superman, nothing. And I'll never forget, my mom kept saying, "Oh, you got to watch this show. You remind me of this character, Clark." And she also knew nothing
about
Superman.
Remind me of the character Lex Luthor.
Yes, exactly, the Lex Luthor story. So I didn't know Lex Luthor was a bad guy. That's how little I knew about Superman. Not at all.
It's kind of awesome.
Nothing. Wow. Yeah, it was actually very awesome because I was like discovering it as the characters were, right? And but I'll never forget, like, as we started watching the show, you know, then our dad was watching, my dad was watching with us, and he's like, "Oh, why are Clark Kent and Lex Luthor hanging out?" And we're like, "Duh, they're friends." Like, we're like, and he's like, "No, Lex Luthor's a bad guy." And we're like, "No, Dad, you're confused. That's Lionel. Yours." He's like, "There's no Lionel. What are you talking about?" So that's how little we knew about it. But yeah, it was one of those things where the pilot then came along as like one of those, you know, like as a rerun later on in the series. Because I think like the first one that I saw, the first one that got me hooked was Cool, because I was like obsessed with a cheerleader like Lana when I was that age, and I was like, "Oh, like I'm Clark and she's, you know, Lana, and she likes this jock asshole and blah, blah, blah." So, you know, so I was like, "Okay, cool, like I'm hooked on the show." And then as I started watching, then they had the pilot, and that was then like it was like a rerun, and they did that with Metamorphosis, like you guys said, and they kind of linked them together. And I remember watching it and just being like blown away by like, "Oh, okay, so these are all these missing elements to me," as not knowing anything, like, "Oh, this is how the kryptonite works, this is how this works," and all of those elements. And then I just recently rewatched it just like a week ago, and me and my mom had a trip down memory lane, and we were rewatching, and it was one of those things where I just, like, in retrospect, realize like, wow, this is a perfect pilot. Like, it's one thing to love it as a kid as you're growing up, but then to watch it as an adult, and for me as a filmmaker too, I was just like, this is a perfect pilot. Like, it has all the elements to introduce every single character, the themes, and how it carries over 10 years later. It's just epic.
Yeah, it really is a really good pilot after rewatching it. I was very impressed revisiting it, like how good it was. Because, like, you know, we're in this age of television now where we're blessed with so many good shows out there. We have so many options, and there's like the quality has risen all as well, like from when we were younger. And so looking back to see, like, you know, this shared show that we all love, the pilot still stands as a really, really good one. And it's actually pretty exceptional. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So Metamorphosis was the first one I saw part of on WB. And then I went, I think it was like, was it LimeWire or ShareBear or something like that? Kazaa? I don't know. It's one of these. So I went back and I found these episodes I had missed. Like the first half of season one, every now and then I'd get an episode and I'd download it. And of course, I'd like start the download before I went to school. And it was done by the time I got home. But the pilot and Metamorphosis were always together. So it's weird because I didn't see the pilot till about near midway to the end of season one. I was like, oh, okay, well, that all makes sense now. they came out on, like, I think it was the Canadian DVD came out with the pilot and Metamorphosis were together. And then if you download it sometime, that would be what people ripped, and that's what I downloaded and watched. And then sometimes they re-air them together. Yeah. They did kind of that seamless, like, they pan up to the sky and they pan down to outside Alana's house, and it works really well. But to me, I mean, you guys say, this is the perfect pilot. Like, I like it. It's fine. But I feel like it's incomplete without the Metamorphosis half because it's just it pays off a lot of things. Because, like, if you think about the pilot, you just kind of leave the whole Whitney thing unresolved, and Lex Luthor has this kryptonite, but you never follow up on that, and him and Lana never kind of have a scene after the, you know, earlier. So it really, even though it was filmed like several months later, it really does complete it. And to me, like I said, I always, it's kind of like Star Trek 2 and 3 and 4. I always have to watch them together. I always have to watch the pilot and Metamorphosis together.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's definitely a set. Like this is, you know, music terminology here. This is definitely movement two. Like the piece is not complete without it. So when I refer to the pilot, I refer to, like, I'm talking about the pilot and Metamorphosis, because to me that just, it just makes sense.
So we need to go around and ask if this was on your list for your own top 10.
I can tell you right now it wasn't on my list, and that was purely an oversight.
So Truex, not on your list.
Was not on my list. Okay. Officially not on my list.
Roka, what about you?
It was on my list. Yeah, it was.
You two for two, man.
I know. Yeah. I know.
All right, Victoria, what about you?
It's so funny because Pilot wasn't one on my list, but Metamorphosis was my number one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
As it should be.
Should I rewatch Metamorphosis? Like, I don't remember liking that episode.
Well, no, love Metamorphosis because, like, he has an actual fight at the end. He knows the freak of the week. You know, like,
sure,
that's a really good episode.
Matt, the thing is, like, before I loved Smallville, I loved Spider-Man. And so, like, I liked Metamorphosis because it was, like, the closest they got to Spider-Man.
When they did Bug Thing. Right.
Bug Boy. You know, Roka, you mentioned not knowing that Superman and Lex Luthor were enemies. Like, I didn't know anything about Spider-Man before I saw the Sam Raimi one. I didn't know Uncle Ben was going to die. That's how little I knew about Spider-Man.
Oh, totally. Neither did I.
I grew up in a DC household, okay? So, anyway, my dad's old comics was all DC. So it was not Pilot was not on my top 10 list. What about you, Lance?
It was number 3 on mine.
Okay. Right on.
This is unlike Lexmas, which was an episode in the future. We have done an episode on the pilot. I looked up the grades we gave it. I gave it a B+, and Lance gave it a B. So Lance, I ask you, why do you hate the pilot so much?
I think it was missing its second movement. I think that's the issue.
Well, also, we just started that was literally, obviously, as the first episode of the podcast. So we're like, all right, I'm not going to give this an A because then, like, that sets the bar so high. In retrospect, I'd probably give it, like, an A- or an A. Not an A+, because I think it is a little incomplete. But I do really like it. It's a very strong start to the show. So so let's just go around. Victoria, what are some strong things in the pilot you want to talk about here?
I was honestly astounded by how great the effects were and how beautifully it was shot. I think when I was younger, I didn't recognize, and I know I probably say this every time I podcast with you, Zach, I'm like, the episode was beautifully shot. But just the production value, especially for a pilot, I was really astounded by the effects budget and, like, the production value of a pilot in the early 2000s. I was really astounded by that. I think the storytelling's amazing. And I also thought there were some, what I really loved, and again, I'm not a DC Comics person as much. I'm definitely more of a Marvel girl. But I thought and so maybe we see this in the comics, but I thought it was so genius tying the way Lex loses his hair to the meteor shower. I thought that was genius. And then I also, and I know it's, like, kind of hokey, but I get it, making Lana kryptonite. And the necklace, I also thought was
You
genius.
See, it's his weakness. You get it, everyone? No, that
really
was.
I get
was.
It. Oh, I know it's kind of hokey, but at the same time, I just love it.
But, well, yeah, because it works. It really works.
It
really
works.
Well.
So my last thing is, like, I also like that Clark, like, was kind of sassy in this. He's like, I just want to be a normal person. Like, I hate having to make all these sacrifices.
Well, I mean, he's like that most of the show, to be fair.
I don't know, but, like, but rewatching season 3 and 4 with you, he's like, I have to make a sacrifice. 5 second pause. Okay, I'm good. Like, right. It just seemed like there was more of a push-pull here, which made him more relatable, which I think helped us all get hooked on the show.
He did have, like, a sense of humor. He was less mopey, you know, even though he was mopey in a graveyard when Lana showed up.
He was cute as hell with Lana in the graveyard when he's doing the, like, what's that, Mr. Lang? Like, it's hokey, but it's also, like, it's really sweet. Like, it's really... I was impressed by Tom's performance just rewatching it today. And kind of impressed that, like, I hadn't really noticed it before, but, like, he's trying where he can. You can tell that he's stiff. He's very stiff in some areas, but I mean, like, overall he's good here. Like, I remember why we all kind of fell for him as Superman, you know?
What about you, Roka? What are some first impressions and strong points of the show you want to mention?
Oh, well, these guys just, like, said it so perfectly, too. It's, like, the Tom's performance, rewatching it, too, is one of those things, like, you know, every time you rewatch, when you're as biased and love it as much as we do, you're like, is it really, you know, is it really as strong or as great? And you rewatch, you're like, yeah, like, his performance was just pure Superman and just really... beautifully, like, understated, if that makes sense. Like, it was very subtle, but which he does really well, but it was very human, and it just, you can see why he drew us all in to his character, because it just felt very real the way that he performed it, and all the characters, and like Victoria mentioned, the effects, just rewatching it the other day, I was like, wow, this was 2001, and rewatching the opening meteor sequence there, I was like, these are feature film effects. Like, you know, they're by today's standards. I mean, there's little things here and there that would be, you know, better or whatever, but by today's standards, it's still like, these are feature film effects. And they were doing this in 2001 on a TV show for the WB, which is, like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, no offense to Matt, but you look at Lois and Clark special effects and they come a long way in just a few years, right? He's done. You can't see him, listeners. He just threw his headsets off in disgust.
I know, as I walk away. No, I agree with what you're saying, too.
Dude, that one, I don't know what episode it is, Matt, but the one where Lex is shooting skeet with Nigel, probably the worst special effect I've ever seen.
And the CGI.
I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
Time to
He's
call
shooting
the lawyers,
skeet off his balcony of Lex Tower, yeah.
That's terrible.
I will say, just... to what Matt was saying, Tom is very good in the scene, in the show. He's pretty subtle throughout until he has to fall in front of Lana. I don't know if that was him or that was a stunt double just doing that, like, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and he just, like, plants. But, like, it was a really good physical fall. It's still very funny.
I was more distracted the fact he had a skateboard. What did you guys think about the skateboard? What is it, Marty McFly?
Bizarre. Did you see, too, he had his arm pad shows Whitney throws him on the ground.
Yeah.
He, like, braces his arm a little bit of the pad.
No, but I tend to get very distracted by other features of Tom Welling, so.
Of course you do, Victoria, of course. I know this is something we all laugh at, but I know it wasn't planned at the time, but it's still kind of fun to look at. Like, but it's just interesting, like, that the opening scene includes Lionel Luthor looking at a paper of Oliver Queen's parents murdered, right? And of course we all make fun of Veritas, as we should, but it's still kind of fun. Like, cool.
How dare you bring up that word right now?
Yeah, he's admiring his handiwork because he just had Robert Queen. Is his name Robert in Smallville? I don't know. Robert Queen, I guess. But no, John Glover, right? I mean, like, he's in this. He's like, oh, what's a good character actor we can get to play young Lex Luthor's father? John Glover. And he's in this, and then they quickly bring him back for Rogue, and then Hothead, and then it goes on from there, Jitters and stuff. And I mean, that's just brilliant casting. You think, like, they could have been a deal where they never bring Lex's dad in, you know? I was like, that just shows you a little slice of Lex's childhood where his dad was kind of like, get your act together, son. You're not going to get anywhere in life without opening your eyes. But then he becomes an integral part of the show.
Which was also, sorry, yep, not to like it. Harp on Shazam, but it was so funny to watch the slight spoilers for Shazam.
Yes.
Oh, I heard he's in this, right?
He's in the first Shazam? Scene and he plays a dad. I'm like, I know him.
Does he not have the first line of the movie?
I think so.
I think he might.
Is he evil in Shazam too?
I'm not going to tell you.
What's evil?
Spoilers.
Also, it's John Glover in a DC property, so do
yeah,
the math.
So you can put two and two together there.
Oh my God, I forgot about Batman and Robin.
He created Poison Ivy.
Jesus.
So amazing. Oh,
right, man.
Have you ever seen, this is just so off topic, but have you ever seen 52 Pickup with John Glover?
No.
So weird, like, 70s thriller, and he's like a sleazy like killer rapist in it. It's great. He's
it's great.
That sounds
you'll love it.
Yeah, so all the actors, I think casting, I mean, this being the first episode, right? I mean, casting the older characters, like John Schneider is Jonathan Kent and Annette O'Toole as Martha Kent, who's a recast from Cynthia Ettinger as the original Martha Kent. I don't know if you guys see when I first downloaded the pilot, like I'm like, what is this alternate pilot? And I'm like, why is this a different Martha Kent? What is this? Thanks Kazaa or whatever. They recast her with Annette O'Toole after the in between the pilot and Metamorphosis, and they reshot the scenes kind of like they did on Seinfeld with Jerry's dad, one of the two of them. So there's an alternate there's like just like, cuz Martha is, that's what I'm saying, Martha doesn't have a lot of scenes in this one, so it was real easy to reshoot. But that's why I like Metamorphosis kind of on the back end. So,
but like, you know, they, speaking of like, you know, the Martha casting, like it was a good thing to see Annette O'Toole in there. It's a legacy casting, because like when I first saw it, I was just like, hey, it's Lana from Superman 3, and I was like, this is amazing. This show called Smallville has Lana from the Superman movies. I was like, this is amazing. This is the best show ever. But to your point about casting though, let's kind of talk about that for a second. So like when you see Lana for the first time, it's like Lana is traditionally like, you know, a white redheaded girl. And so when you see Kristen Kirk, who's like who has like, you know, Asian American descent, this is like, oh wow, this is pretty progressive for 2001, because considering all other shows on the network at the time were not like that at all. And the fact that Pete, you know, like his best friend, who's also traditionally not a black person, was a black person of this, is like, oh, good, like, you know, points to you guys for like, you know, making the world look like the world instead of just, you know, not like it is.
Totally fair. And they're gonna get married eventually, I hear. So that's
well, actually, that's as far as they go.
Yeah, you know, Chloe was originally gonna be African American or a quote unquote ethnic character according to the casting calls, but they liked Allison Mack's performance so much that they cast her, and they're like, well, now we got to make Pete, you know, not white.
Yeah.
So. And I've said this, and I think we can all agree, if like they just didn't know what to do with Pete after they made him black, you know, like if he had been a white guy, he would have been around at least 7 years, right?
Well, yeah. Maybe, because Whitney was around for only 1 year.
Yeah,
well, yeah, but his function was to be, he was the obstacle boyfriend, the template that they use in The Flash and in Arrow, and they continue to improve upon it and refine it, because he's just a one, like Whitney here, right? He's just a one-dimensional character. And he pretty much is for most of season one, honestly, until like his dad gets sick near the end of the season, and they try to give him some humanity. And actually, he has a really good arc if you just look at like the season one. Like at the end of season one, like him and Clark are like, we've had a weird year. They kind of shake hands, and you know, that's cool. Eric Johnson, he kind of knew what he was in for. I know in The Companion, he was like, yeah, I kind of figured that I was the boyfriend of the love interest of the main character, so I wasn't going to be around very long. But I think for what he has, what they give him to do, he does well. And, you know, and no one has mentioned this yet. I need to mention it. Michael Rosenbaum, people. Rosenbaum.
I mean, it's
his own category.
The guy from Zoe Duncan, Jack and Jane as Lex
Luthor.
Oh,
that guy. Yeah, he was in this.
I mean, like, and that's like comedic actors can just do an excellent job with this. Because you look at John Cryer right now. I don't know if anyone's watching Supergirl who might be listening, but I think he's doing a bang up job. I think
Excellent job.
And John Shea from Lois and Clark and Rosenbaum are the best three Lexes. How can they get Lex Luthor so right on TV, but so wrong on the big screen?
Always wrong on the big screen.
What are you talking about?
And when they got him closest on the big screen, now we can't watch it anymore. Yeah.
But the thing about Rosenbaum though, it's like he's just there's so much going on you know, under the surface, you know, because he, from the minute he gets out of his Porsche, like, thanks, Dad. You're like, this guy, man, he's something else. And the whole episode, like, you know, him trying to be friends with Clark, and it makes sense because he's this kind of outcast guy, and it is kind of creepy how, like, this 22-year-old billionaire wants to, like, be BFFs with a 15-year-old high school student, but, you know, I don't know. He did save his life, so.
Does that, like, do you believe a man can fly thing ever come back? I was trying to think about that, but like, it's really just so that they could say the line in the pilot.
Yeah, it's just a Superman callback.
The callback. They were just having their giggles, I think.
Right, because I don't think they were planning Zod already.
No.
But can I ask you guys, rewatching it, I realize how many of his lines could be interpreted as creepy when you know who Lex Luthor is. But me not knowing who he was, I'm just like, oh, cool, like, this guy's his best friend. But for you guys, like, watching it, when you first saw it, was Lex, like, I mean, you knew who he was going to be, but, like, in the pilot, did you feel like, oh, this guy is, you know, manipulating Clark and he's a bad guy already? Or did you think, or did you know where they were going with it, with him being a good guy and turning evil as the show progressed? Like, how did you all come to it and stuff?
I was intrigued by it initially because I was just like, well, he's obviously the villain. But like, when you see the episode, I was like, oh, they're going to set up a friendship here. And then once you kind of realize that that's what they're going for, it's like, oh, we're going to see the two of them like kind of move apart and we're going to see how they become enemies. And I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. I don't know how it's going to end. It was me thinking about it back then. I was like, I don't know how this is going to end, but it's going to be an interesting journey to say the least. So I kind of saw what they were doing from the jump.
I think when I first started watching, you know, back in the day, I knew that Lex Luthor was a villain, but I didn't know enough to be like, oh, hey now. I just kind of went with it. And then I think rewatching it two nights ago, I think honestly, the young actor who plays Lex does such a good job that even with everything that I know now, I obviously am much more well acquainted with the premise of the show, I just kind of took everything at face value and was like, just kind of gave him that blank slate to operate from. Yeah.
The ultimate tool for the Master Thief. I cannot not say that.
I didn't see that coming.
So, you know, Victoria, you mentioned him losing his hair. And I think that was a real genius. There's a lot of genius decisions storytelling wise here. Because, like, first of all, the meteor shower coming with the spaceship, genius. Because, one, it covers up the spaceship, which is the 2001. We have satellites
and all that.
And then it creates a weakness for Clark. So an obstacle. And then it creates these mutants that exist in Smallville.
So that's your episodic structure. Yeah.
Right.
There you go. Your genius.
Yeah.
It also throws that guilt in, right?
Yeah, because he's responsible for everything. Indirectly, but if he had not come here, and that's the thing, and it ties into Lana too, right? Because he feels so guilty about it. That's why when he first sees the wall of weird, it shakes him because he's like, oh man, this is because of where I came from and what came with me. And it also ties the origin of, at this point in the show, the three main characters, right? You have Clark, Lex, and Lana. Clark comes in the meteor shower. Lex is forever changed by it, and so is Lana because her parents get killed, and that defines her character for, you know, pretty much the rest of the show on and off.
Yeah, like, that's what makes this pilot so great is that, like, you know, one of my favorite comic writers, right now, Kyle Higgins, he says every story has a promise and a premise. And so in this, with Smallville, like, you see, you know, the promise of the show already, like, you know, with after this episode is finished, you see the promise in the premise of the show, like, automatically. You see where Clark is going, you see where Lex is going, you see how their paths are going to converge, you see the same thing with Lana, you see how Clark brings things, like, his coming into the world brings trouble also at the same time that he is responsible for in directly and indirectly. And so, and all this is, like, you know, the sets up the trials for Superman. That's why this, to me, works, and something like Gotham does not, but we can get into that a different day at a different time.
Yeah, there's not enough time. I also think, like, visually, the pilot, we talked a little bit about the cinematography and stuff, but, like, just, I mean, watching that damn stunt again when the Porsche goes over the bridge.
Oh, that's still one of the best stunts on the show.
That stuntman just fly. Nothing about that isn't convincing or kind of horrifying to watch. And then, like, even just, like, the little cues, the red capes on him from the EMTs, like, Even like at the end, I'd never really quite noticed. Maybe it's Hulu's fault. At the end, they fade up to the stars, and there's like little red and green stars up there, like other little red suns and Kryptons out there somewhere. You know, like just they obviously took the time. It's a pilot. Of course, they're going to take a little bit extra time, but it's impressive the production values they got. Just like we've been saying effects, but again, like physical, they threw a guy in a car off a bridge and it looks amazing.
That is the key. They hadn't quite gone into the, well, let's just use a CGI car.
Right. Let's just zoom them in real quick or whatever.
Let's just add some CGI fire to the Kent farm when it gets hit by a meteorite or something. Like, no. Like stuff gets destroyed. Like the truck getting flipped over, like all these physical, tangible things. And did you catch how the spaceship, they hadn't designed the spaceship yet? It's like the artichoke looking spaceship.
Yeah. Oh, I hate it so much.
I also have a note, I think because it's been a long time, but I wrote chocolate bar key.
Yes, it does look like a chocolate bar.
Does that prop becomes the heart of the ship, right?
Yeah, they upgrade that as well.
It becomes everyone's favorite octagon.
Right.
That's not even related. The heart of the ship is what, and I think that's in Skinwalkers. They bring that back.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that looks like much like the Smallville High School letter jackets get upgraded.
Yes.
There's just an S, but they made it too Superman-y. They had like a shield behind it and stuff. They're like, all right, let's tone that back a little bit. The barn gets fleshed out. The torch gets fleshed out. The wall of weird, like, look like they're in the library in the pilot. But
they were not in a set. No, they were totally in that school.
The mansion is so different, right?
Yeah, the mansion. So it's like they really refined everything.
Yeah,
it's all real locations, right? They haven't really built much.
Yeah, so when they actually got the green light to series, they like, all right, now we really can afford to build all this stuff. But it's funny to think that, like, you know, just being the continuity nitpicker that I am as I watch these things, like, this is supposed to be the next day? Everything looks so different.
Right.
So
your hair has changed a lot.
I'll tell you what's not there. The Veritas symbol in stained glass. I'm never going to let that go. Because that's, honestly, that's the most insulting retcon in the history of retcons. But anyway.
Yeah, it's awful. Anybody else notice how, like, artfully they dodge saying the word alien in this? Like, I was trying to watch it, like not as... You know,
your parents
as
aren't
in,
from around
into it
here.
As we are. Yeah, they never say it. Obviously, they show the spaceship, but like,
that's
I get
really
it. Like, guys that are saying you didn't know it was a Superman thing. Like, I get it.
Well,
you know,
they never. And for a lot of Smallville, and that's a good point, Matt. Like, they establish, like, they say your abilities, and not his, like, his powers. Like, later on, they call him his powers, but it's kind of keep it grounded. Because remember, this is 2001. We're not allowed to see superhero costumes or mention superhero names. Those are terrible.
Gross.
Those will never be successful. We'll never make money in a box office or on TV ever again. So
no.
Dean Cain tried it, and now no one else can.
It's kind of funny this came out like in retrospect, right after Unbreakable, right? And that was the same thing where it was like the studio was like, no, like we don't want to advertise this as a superhero thing. Like that's geeky. That's not in vogue or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
It became taboo. And so that's why, like, we have this like pared down show, but now Smallville ended up proving them wrong.
Yeah. I think that's actually part of the reason I've said this before and I've gotten real into it on my podcast, but like Smallville was such a trailblazer and such a pioneer. Mm-hmm. And honestly though, I think that worked for them. I think the fact that they grounded it and they pared down all the super stuff and they really made it about this young man who doesn't feel like he fits in anywhere and is reckoning with all of this. I think that really set a course both on TV and in screen that there's a human way to tell these epic mythical stories.
Yeah.
And it's about something, you know? I mean, you look at a lot of, you know, I love the Arrowverse and all that stuff too, but it's like, well, not as much as I used to, but it's like, what are these episodes like about even, you know? I mean, it's not like when The Flash was I think the best season of the Arrowverse is season one of The Flash. Because it was like, it was the human Barry, his adoptive family, his dad, his biological family, like his, you know, all his relationships, like you sold on that. And even like the villain hero kind of thing was about the relationship between Reverse Flash and Flash, so that's what it was based out of. Instead of like, what superhero are we going to fight this week, or who's going to show up this week, or what supervillain are we going to fight this week? And that's what comic books devolve into. But Smallville, since that you kind of had to strip all that away, you have to get to the human core of it all, and we're all hitting their own heads about this young man who doesn't know his place in the world. He's trying to figure it out. And that's what we all are in high school and when we're younger. And even, you know, even when we're older, sometimes we're still trying to figure it out.
Or
it's
currently
a universal journey.
Who knows? Yeah.
45. There's still time. So and I think everybody could relate in some way to one of these characters. Like, it's funny. It's like depends on where you are in life or what kind of mood you're in. You're like, you watch Smallville, you're like, yeah, I'm totally Clark. Or, no, unfortunately, I'm totally Lex. So that's the beauty of the show. So, and I don't, do you guys, and yes, it was on the WB, but I mean, being a high schooler at the time, like being Clark's age, right? I was like, oh, this is great. I love Superman and I'm a teenager and I have all these feelings and this is like, this is my jam, right? But I think they did a pretty good balance and they established that balance pretty well here in the pilot for like how much superhero-ish stuff we're going to do and how much like to you know, to lack of a better term, to WB-ish, Dawson's Creek-ish shit up.
Yeah.
To the point where the show starts with the epic, with the cinematic, with the, you know, the Superman of it, and ends with like, oh, that boy just wants to be with that girl. That's good. Totally. You know, like it totally becomes a WB show after 40 minutes.
Oh yeah, yeah. It real does. And also, and you know, we haven't talked about it yet, but the high school element, like this first in the pilot, like it starts off with like the backdrop of all of this is homecoming.
Yeah.
So like it's, you know, just something that everybody can relate to and everybody knows what that is.
Or Americans.
And exactly. Yeah. Americans know what that is. And it's something that for us to really like, just really just like dive into and just like, oh, we understand this world. I'm all about it.
And enjoy
did he really think Lana wasn't gonna go to the homecoming dance with Whitney? Like, hey, so you going to that thing? Yeah, I'm going to that thing. Come on, man. You gotta take your shot, I guess, but come on.
Hey, it was a big deal. He mustered up a lot of courage to do that, okay?
Okay, all right. Do you think Whitney's treatment of Clark is kind of extreme here? Like, or just the whole, what do you guys think about the scarecrow thing?
They strung you up and put you in a field. Even the Romans saved that for special occasions.
Great line from Metamorphosis, the next episode, people. He also like checks out Lana in the first scene. Creepy in retrospect. Well, even out of retrospect, but
who does?
Can't knock your taste in women as he bites an apple and throws it
the
into
apple.
Trouble.
Very John Glover thing.
Yes. So.
Woof. I mean, you hear stories. You hear those like tragic, like. Those stories of just people doing unimaginable things. And I mean, I grew up in suburbia, but I also grew up in like, I know no one believes this, but in New Jersey, like I grew up in a farm town. When you don't have much else to do, but I also grew up, I went to a huge state school too. And I can totally see the scarecrow kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
It's just hazing.
Yeah.
And so like, and unfortunately like stuff like this goes on.
Yeah.
You know, like whether, like if you're in a group of it, like, or a part of a team or something like that, like dumb stuff is going to go on and you're going to do dumb stuff.
When I was at Chapel Hill, a kid died after he fell off like a water tower or he fell off something and died.
Right. Never underestimate the cruelty of children.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so so that's you know, it's believable that in this small town, you know, the varsity football team would torment somebody. And it just so happens that Whitney caught Lana giving Clark a peck on the cheek and he was like, I'm nipping this in the bud, and that he made Clark the target of his
anger. And then the only unrealistic thing is like he's like, you 6'3". Yes. Like a Greek god. You're it.
Superman, back of my truck. Go.
That's the thing. Like, I understand why they cast someone like Tom Welling. And you can say, well, Kryptonians age faster and mature puberty. Whatever. I can fanboy my explanation. But you look at Shazam, right? Those kids look like teenagers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I'm not. So I understand. I mean, it was a different
Zach
era.
Levi,
I think now
in particular.
We're actually. Yes. So nowadays they're actually trying to cast younger people for these roles, but I mean, this is 2001. We're still like in the Dawson's Creek era of like, let's cast a 30-year-old, you know, Beverly Hills 90210, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
Melrose Place.
Well, I'd be all right. So I have two jaded Hollywood explanations for that. One is that A, you don't want to cast a minor because they can't work as many hours.
Working hours.
And then two, I don't think. I mean, nowadays I think they cast younger actors. Like, I know they did it with Tom Holland in the MCU because they're like, oh, you're signing a 9-movie contract deal.
Yeah.
So we need you to be able to age in this. And I don't think they really expected Smallville to be a 10-year long show.
Right.
No,
right.
That is clear. Yeah. Well, at the end of this very episode, he's like, Jonathan asks Clark, he's like, hey, Clark, how you doing? He's like, ask me in about 5 years. That's like, that's a 5-year plan.
Brilliant. Okay, yes. Hulu didn't have that. I knew there was stuff missing because they also, they cut out the scene where he stacks the trucks too.
Yeah. Yes, the
why is Superman such an ass all the time? Like, he's Man of Steel, Superman 2, Smallville. He's just an ass to bullies. Like, you know.
Did anyone have the novelization of this pilot?
No. Can you send me it?
No, me neither. But if I had read it as a kid, I would also say there was a scene with Gabe Sullivan and Lex
that's a deleted scene. And that's on the DVD.
They shot that?
They shot it, but not with the Gabe Sullivan from the show. It was a different Gabe Sullivan, like a different actor. So when Lex kind of, him and Lex are walking through the planet and that kind of stuff.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Wow, I only ever read this in the composition.
Well, no, guys, I do want to cover the novels when I'm out of episodes, you know, 5 years from now. So
I would love to talk about one of my vivid memories.
We'll read the novels and we'll talk about it again.
We'll just do live reads. That'll be the Patreon, is us doing live reads. So I'll play all the women.
We're going to cast. That's great. That's great. We're going to cast it. We got Lionel Luther over here, Rocha. All right.
Can you get your friend?
You got the Lionel hair.
I don't know how far these novels go, but can you get your friend who knows Kyle Gallner to be the Flash in this?
Yeah.
Because I would truly be loving.
The novels, they stopped after season one. Okay. Let me just be clear. A weak part of the pilot is the freak of the week. They have so much to establish, right? It's the first episode of the first season. They're establishing this new universe of Superman. And, you know, something's got to give. There's not enough time, you know. So the villain falls. It's kind of like in Star Trek 09. They had so much to do. They need to establish the crew, all that sort of stuff. The villain in that, Nero, for all of you, I'm really nerding out my Star Trek here. But anyway, hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
I'm Nero. Yeah.
I mean, Eric Bannon was fine, but like, it's like, okay, we're not here for that. You're just an obstacle to like assemble the team. That's the kind of deal here. There needs to be a mystery that needs to go on, and that's what I'm saying. Like the fight. This is so classic Smallville. I'm so glad it's the first fight. Like he throws the guy 30 feet, and that's like the end of it.
All done, right?
And even when he wakes up though, like they use this in these promos, on these ABC Family promos, Victoria. You're talking about like when the guy wakes up and he's like, oh, what's going on? He's like, hi, I'm Clark Kent. And you're in Smallville. ABC Family. You know, he might as well have said that.
Yeah, there's your trailer.
I could tell you the song that's playing in the background of the ABC Family promos. Like, it's Nice to See You by Fooled by April.
Love it.
Okay, wait, quick aside. I was like a huge Spider-Man fan. I was obsessed with Spider-Man, like beyond obsessed with Spider-Man. I was like, F Superman. Superman is not as cool as Spider-Man. And then I was on vacation in Cape Cod, and I saw these ABC Family promos while I was watching Whose Line Is It Anyway? And I, like, Tom Welling's face came on screen. And I was like, who is that? I was like, what is going on here? and like, everyone would just scream to me. I could be showering. I could be, like, doing anything. And everyone's like, the commercial's on! And I would run and just, like, watch it, being like, I want to go to there. And then I became a Superman fan.
It's funny, like you're talking about that. Like a lot of people, like at school, like, cause you know, in high school, like a lot of people that we talked to, like, were watching the show because it was new, it was fresh, and it was really popular. Especially the first couple of years. And so like everybody had that reaction with Tom, and then like, and just like all of us had the same reaction with Lana and Chloe.
Yeah.
So
or Chloe. Yeah. Yeah.
I said, and Chloe. It's just funny. Like everybody had the same reactions to the stars of the show. It was just like, oh, this is our stuff right here.
That's also why we can't cast 14-year-olds, because these people have to be hot and we have to want to see them kiss each other. That's a big part of it.
You can't sexualize a 14-year-old. Yeah.
Right.
Now you know,
you're talking about
the music, right? The pop music begins here.
So great, yeah.
Lifehouse, Evanescence.
I'm gonna cry. Oh my god, I have so much.
Just everything, you're everything.
Are we all fans of everything?
Every time I hear that song, I always get chills and I think of that moment. And there are quite a few moments, I'm not ashamed to admit, that I'll get teary-eyed hearing that song. It's
You're all I need. It's very heartfelt angst, like seeing him and the camera pans up and all that. It's so good.
The moment when it cuts from her being there to her not being there is just so relatable, you know? It's just such a great moment.
And just listen to the lyrics. It's like, it's perfect. Like, y'all know how much I love perfect songs for perfect occasions. That is the perfect song for that occasion. There's nothing, no other song would have fit.
Yeah.
It's a perfect song for the unhealthy relationship that is Clark and Lana.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it is.
Yes.
But we didn't know it was unhealthy then. Everything?
Yeah. Right.
I can't.
He also has a very vivid fantasy life,
puppy love. That's a weird thing. Let's talk about that, right? Just and we can come back fantasy to if anyone has anything to say. But like the daydreaming that he does in this episode.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
At the end, he imagines he's the football star. Like, we've all been there, right? It's just going to be a thing. Pilots always have these things that they always drop, and they're like, all right, enough daydreaming. It's funny to see him do that multiple times in this episode, and they never really do that again.
Yeah.
Artichoke spaceships, for instance.
Yeah. Or Martha's class on weekday nights.
Yes, that was hilarious. I was like, what class? What is she talking about?
I don't think they had fleshed out her Metropolis backstory by then, Victoria.
Yeah. But... and the Nell Jonathan thing too got dropped out of nowhere.
Revisiting that, I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Great.
Loved
Here's
it, though.
Here's a plot line that they
Loved
never really
it.
Explored.
No, I think... I feel like they referenced it a couple of times. Like, that's why Clark and Lana never really became friends, even though their houses in this pilot are 100 yards from each other.
Well, and she was wearing a kryptonite necklace, but go on.
Well, right. But that's like a reason. But I just remember there's an episode somewhere where in season one, it's like first half of season one.
That's,
where she's
Shimmer is the episode. They're out on the porch. Yeah. You're like, oh, yeah, did you do my dad? Or... and your aunt used to date.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Aunt Nell was an interesting character. I wish they would have used her more instead of just writing her off.
Yeah,
that was another, and also another drop thing that was, like, I'm kind of glad they dropped, but it's just kind of weird. Like, in the pilot, you know, when we talked about the freak waking up and being like, oh, you know, who am I? And you're blah, 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 and your name's, and you're Jeremy, and you're in Smallville, like, right, I'm Clark Kent. But, like, they never did that again, right? Like, where the freak totally forgets. He did, like,
maybe
it's
maybe
like
once
has,
or
he
twice
or she has
ever,
more
but you're right, they didn't give every, and although we have an amnesia count on the show, they at least didn't give every single villain like some kind of like, because they had to be smart about it, like Clark's using his, and that's part of the fun of the show too, there is no secret identity here, so he has to really be smart about how he uses his powers.
At least they didn't wipe the main villain's memory.
No, you know, that would be terrible. Like, imagine if the show ended and like Lex Luthor got his mind wiped. That'd be the stupidest ending, right? Anyway, maybe we'll talk about that in our conversations as we go down this list. We'll see. So his power set, I think it was real smart to just give him strength and speed, and then he kind of earns the
and
powers.
Invulnerability.
Right. And now he gets to puberty throughout the series.
Yeah. It's really great.
Heat vision, the x-ray, you know, they kind of run out around season six, and they're like, oh, give him the super breath.
Right.
Okay.
We all know that.
But that was smart, though, like to see him, and that's something they kind of evolved over season one. He didn't really know how strong he was. Like, he didn't know that he could get hit by a car. You know, like, that's why he sticks his arm in the wood chipper, because it's like, look, what's up here? Because he knew he was, like, fast and strong. You could still kind of explain that away. That's why he's like googling the fastest man alive. I guess that might have been some kind of Flash reference. I don't know.
And doing like the speed looking.
Yeah, the speed looking.
Like, there's no effect. It's just him like moving his head back and forth all the time.
But the
That
was smart, I think. And that's that kind of, because if he had all these powers already, of course you'd know you were an alien, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He knows he's different. He just doesn't know exactly how different. He just kind of like. Yeah, or why. So he just kind of doesn't, it's a mystery to him constantly.
It's interesting, too, like as we're talking about it, we're talking about the show, a lot of the characters are in place here that we're going to live with for the first, with maybe Lionel being the exception because we only get him in the beginning there, but like...
But he's still here.
None of the like trappings of it are here yet. Again, it's a pilot, like they haven't built all the sets, we're not in a hospital once, it's a very weird thing.
Are you sure it was an episode of Smallville?
It's interesting to see that, you know, like... You know, it's a successful show, and it's telling that it's a success because maybe these characters were ready to go from minute one, you know, and then the rest of it kind of came with it. But it's telling.
Yeah, it's we joke about the lack of continuity, but it's not like, oh, they ruined. No, it's they just kind of tighten the screws a little bit on everything, kind of gave it a nice finesse, a second pass. And nothing really contradicts anything they do forward until they get really late and again retconning and stuff. But these characters, you're right, Matt, as we see them here, they pretty much are the characters we see for the first few seasons of the show.
Yeah, yeah, I the only one who was like, oh, remember when Lana was like lovely and tall?
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes, same.
Were you the only? No, you were not the only one.
Yeah, season one Lana's my favorite Lana.
She's
not a raging psychopath.
And she's not like accusing people of lies and secrets and all that stuff.
And she doesn't know Clark very well yet.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good call. The talking to the parents of the grave reminded me of Batman Mask of the Phantasm. Anybody else?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about that in our first episode.
I haven't listened to that first episode in a long time. So, you guys ever, this is a side note. You guys are listeners. You guys are fans. You guys are my friends now. Do you ever like re-listen to the episodes of the podcast? I mean, how big of a fans are you?
Yeah.
I do.
Okay. Because I do sometimes.
The podcast would sometimes the podcast would make my really long, like my road trips, like when I'd have to go and teach out in Irvine, you know, I'd go and teach film in the summer, and like going out there and listening to the podcast would like make it so much less boring and fun. Like I'd be like, I'll just listen to you guys geeking out about Smallville as I drive 2 hours. It's great.
We have re-listenability, people. Yeah. You heard it here first.
No, I love listening to it on my runs. And I also feel like Smallville, like, not a lot of people, I don't know, in the general populace of Los Angeles, like Smallville. So it's like such a thing. It's such a big deal
for me. We have all three of you guys right here.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Or at least in the circles I run in. I think because I don't know. I work with a lot of jaded, like soulless industry people. But but I just love that. I'm like, oh, like this is, it's like a place, or maybe because my like fangirl partner in crime is not a big Smallville fan. But it's, yeah, no, I like just like having like a little like Smallville haven.
Yeah.
I will say it does seem to, especially like around people our age, it seems to be the one like geek thing that you might mention that goes like, oh, I remember that show.
Yeah.
Because it was a thing for a second. Yes. They might have watched like season two or three on and off.
They remember things that they were around. Because there were billboards. I mean, like it was mainstream.
Exactly. You know, he was everywhere for a second.
Yeah. And the whole like aspect of it being like our age group so specifically, it's like that didn't fully hit me until I was a teacher. And when I was teaching the kids who are now how old we were when we were watching Smallville. And I would bring this up all the time, you know, like, and like I'd somehow sneak it into like, you know, whatever I was teaching, like I'm teaching Romeo and Juliet and I'd show them like a Clark and Lana scene.
I would have died. And I would have like peed my pants. Yeah. Yeah.
But they didn't know what it was at all. And I was like, you guys have never heard of this? I was like, that's your homework. Forget like regular English.
Forget that.
You don't know you know how to read.
Miles and Goff, yeah.
Well, yeah. So, you know, I think ultimately the pilot, I mean, it's hard to talk about that without talking about just the show in general and like all that. So it all kind of melds there because it all started here. If this was an unsuccessful, hey, this could have gone the way of Aquaman or Wonder Woman, right? Or, you know, Birds of Prey. Huh? I mean, it fizzled out.
Hey, we went to series. I will say too, just like a little personal note here. We were doing Lois and Clark. We finished season one for the summer. We looked at the pilot. And then I went, wow, I wonder if someone's doing this as a podcast, because that's such a fucking commitment. And then I found you, and like that's how this kind of wound up happening.
Funny, you know,
so it's just very cool. It's all tied to this.
Someone has suggested your show to me, like, oh, you need to check these guys out. And I think we kind of both like showed up on each other's radar at the same time. And that's why I had you on for the season one finale. So
yeah, I thought you were just being nice.
Since we're talking about listening to podcasts and stuff, so Lance moved to Philadelphia a couple years ago. And I was about halfway done with your podcast in season one, Matt, and then we pretty much listened to the second half of your first season to finish our trip up there.
Oh my god! I'm so sorry.
This is the place. Lois and Clark is a lot better. We don't have to look at the special effects. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. When these idiots talk about it, it's really good.
Yeah, this is really. They're having a good time. There might be something to this. Yeah. No, season one is actually still my favorite season of Lois and Clark. So.
Yeah,
all because of John Shea. But yeah, I mean, like I think ultimately, like I think we've said it in many ways around here. I think the key to Smallville was the characters and the casting, and when written correctly, when those, I mean, that goes for anything, right? Writing, casting, and acting.
Right.
But like the stars align for this show, and they get out of alignment as it goes every now and then. But they always kind of rotate back around every now and then. But the foundation here is extremely solid, and it all starts here.
I think if I could add, I think, though, and yeah, if it's good writing, it'll be good. But I think what was so special and why this worked is because they were, the stars aligned, and they struck that balance of incorporating enough of what we already knew, whether you be like a big Superman fan or even like someone who is just kind of peripherally aware of Superman, like I was when I started, or if someone was like going completely cold, like Matt, they did enough where you could kind of like see, you could, they just, and they did this, I just think they incorporated the right mix of the lore with like new twists, and then also just leaving everything open for them to develop. I think that's why it worked, if I was to say.
What are your final thoughts, Drix?
Oh God, I was just listening to those. I'm sorry. like I've been saying, I think it's a great starting off point for the series. You caught me off guard, man. Sorry.
All right, Roka, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, they're just pretty much kind of echoing what you guys have said. It's just such a solid foundation. It really starts us off in kind of like the perfect place for. Like Victoria mentioned, like there's can be people coming at it like you guys who like have known Superman, and you can see like, oh, this is so cool how this twist is different on the mythology, and you can come at it at that point, or you can be someone like me who knows nothing coming into it, and then and it doesn't lose either viewer, which is really interesting to me. Like it somehow strikes that perfect balance of like the emotional realism as. You know, there's such a difference between realism and emotional realism, but the emotional realism that they strike, that can draw kind of any audience in, whether they're into Superman or whether they're not at all, right? Like it can draw anyone in. So they strike that balance of that and the fantasy and the magic of Superman. And now rewatching it all these years later as a massive Superman fan, that balance is just so, like beautifully struck, and it's just there in everything, like in the dialogue, like all the clever little egg nuggets they throw in there that now that, you know, weren't anything to me back then that now mean something. The visuals, like you guys mentioned, the red cape, it's just everything about it strikes that balance really beautifully. And I feel like that's something that carries throughout like the first three seasons spectacularly. And, you know, as we said, it drops in season four or whatever, some people might feel, but they pick it up later, and we get into that later, you know. But it really strikes that balance really beautifully, and as Matt mentioned, it starts as an epic and then it ends as a WB romance, and that's another, that balance they strike really well, which is really beautiful.
I will also say too, like as a Superman fan, the moment of the Kents finding baby Clark there is like that is my favorite filmed version of
yes.
that. It's just yes. I really like the Lois and Clark pilot as like my version of the origin, but that is just so it's pitch perfect.
It's, yeah.
It's a weird thing though, like
it's so cute too.
The casting was great.
Yeah.
I did find it weird though, just like real quick, they used Electric Guy really early. I remember thinking that as a kid, like that this is a weird one to just kind of throw away on the pilot here. You know what I mean?
I think it was just, you know, it's probably just, it was an easy one for them to do effects wise.
Right.
So they
right.
just kind of made the quickest, that easiest decision. Effect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
But yeah. But no, like, you know, just picking back on what everybody else is saying, this pilot is just like, it's a great launch pad for the rest of the show. I mean, if this didn't work, we're not here doing this right now.
No.
And it obviously did, because like the best part about the pilot is like it tells us everything we need to know about everybody involved in the show, and it hooks you from you know, from the end of the episode, and we're looking forward to seeing what happens next for everybody. Like there's an actual like eagerness to find out what happens next after this pilot, and I think every pilot should do that, and all the good ones do it, and this is a perfect example of that.
Couple final random thoughts. The guy that runs the auto shop, he goes on to play the Dark Archer, Oliver's mentor. And
interesting.
What's that called? Disciple in season 9.
Wow.
He was Stephen Bakkik, I think his name is, because I looked it up before because I'm a huge nerd.
Oh, I just wanted, before we go, can I just say, like, because I have a lot of feelings about the song Everything in this pilot. No, but it was just crazy because I was like bracing myself for it because like I'm the weird thing where if I love something, I actually don't want to watch it too many times. I think because it's such an intense emotional experience for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Returns.
Yeah, but it was bonkers when like I was watching that scene and I was even ready for it and listening to that song. I literally like was in the room where I first watched it in for me 2004.
Took
and
you
it
back,
was just
huh?
like. It was spooky.
That's
what I get you. Yeah, it was spooky.
That's so cool.
But it just shows you the power of it.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of like the Smallville love song in the first season because they bring it back in the finale, too, of season one. So kind of like.
Oh, I hated that they had it with Whitney playing it, though. That's Clark's song. F that.
I was riding the Clark ship by then, my friend. So I was all about that. They can have that song.
So random question for super nerds like us. We're all talking about the characters they're established on. Is there a character from later on in the series that could have been introduced here and made it a better show?
Oh,
I have a thought.
Oh, he has a thought.
Open. Go.
What's your thought?
Because I wanted to ask you this question. I didn't want to be blank as I did it. I would have loved to see hints of Lutessa. Throw a little bit.
I see.
Little hints throughout the series, even if we never saw her, if it was just like, you know, Dad's got his second family, or like just something crappy like that, just to give the feeling that like when Lionel's not here, he might be scamming around.
You know, I give season 7 all the credit for retconning. Listen, season 8 just invented someone who was the second in command of Luther Corps. We never heard of him.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good call.
I do think that would have been cool. I mean, I rewatched what was it, Lineage recently too, and there's that you know, that moment that I thought like, oh, okay, I know it wasn't planned, but it fits really well with the whole test thing where he's like, I loved your mother very deeply, but I was not a perfect husband.
Well, you know, speaking of Lionel, like with John Glover, and we're going back around, but like he had a little bit in this episode, but like when he sees Lex's ball for the first time, like his like look of just disgust, you're like,
disgust.
Yep.
Yes,
he's like, what is
great...
that's your child effort, like
that's
the point. He's like one of the worst parent ever.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, that's my child's like, not normal anymore.
Well, what would have interesting thought on that? A question on that thought too is like, what would have Lex's, you know, whole arc been if it had just been the original plan that he like Glover would just make a few guest appearances and he would just be like a bad dad, but like that's pretty much it. Like,
yeah, it would be very episodic and very like when do we need to give Lex some drama here, we'll call John Glover in for something.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
yeah,
he became the big bad of the show for a couple seasons. That was essential. So
yeah. Lex might have had to become the villain sooner without him.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's
maybe they could have wrapped the show up in a more timely manner.
But that's not their fault though. That was I don't know. I don't think
they're
that
a victim of their own success, Victoria.
Right, right.
But Matt, to answer your question, Kenny Braverman would have been a good one to add in the pilot because that's
Braverman.
A character. He's in the comic books. He was in Smallville at the time. Did he have electric powers, Lance?
Oh, okay.
I don't think so.
I count on you to know these things. You didn't know it. But he was a character that was in high school with him. He had some kind of, I think, electric powers of some kind. And
I thought it was like telepathy, telekinesis.
Was he in the Justice?
No, that was Adam Brody.
Yes, well done.
Please do keep up, Lance.
Shazam! What, was he in the when the in this Legion of Superheroes episode of Superman the Animated Series? Kenny Braverman? Anyway, look it up, people who are listening. But I think that's always somebody like, oh, well, they're definitely going to use this guy because he was in his high. You know, like three characters in the high school with Clark. It's like Lana, Pete, and like this guy. You know, and he just never showed up in Smallville, which was shocking to me. But anyway, they could have had a more like established like young Superman villain for the pilot. Maybe that's some change I would make. Make the villain less generic Lightning guy.
Or maybe if like maybe you don't introduce someone in because I'm not as up on my Superman lore. But maybe you make Eric. Maybe you made Whitney a meteor freak.
Oh, that'd be interesting too.
You see, but they made everybody a meteor freak by the end.
I know.
Chloe,
I think the pilot is great. But a question was posed to me, and I'm riffing.
Fair enough.
Can we have everything playing over this?
Everything. Yeah, we can. It's the Patreon. I violate so much copyright. Like, I'm afraid that one day we're going to shut it all down. It's okay, though. I have all the raw files, so if when I get shut
right
down,
on.
I'll just switch out the music. We'll go for underground, generic, like I should.
Yeah, pull a Hulu and just change it all out.
Exactly.
You guys, we would be remiss not to mention that everything is actually not the first pop song in the show, though. Come to think of it, it's The Calling, right? When Lex is
unstoppable.
That Lex's terrible car music, because Jesus,
it's totally his he's like, you know, his seduction music, and then he hits Clark, and on the commentary, Al and Miles are like laughing about it being like a meet cute, only it's meet violent.
I mean, they kiss. The first thing they do to each other is kiss.
Oh, I know. I saw that, and it's, I was like, awesome. The mouth to mouth that launched 1,000 ships.
There he is.
Yep.
Well, there was I just watched this interview with all the cast, like a recent con, and Tom was saying that Michael kept making jokes the whole time, and he couldn't take it seriously because he was making jokes about them kissing.
Not surprising. Michael,
right? But it's also interesting, like, they start literally that close and then become supervillains. So, like, I know so we're deep, it's
look
very
the analysis from Matrix right there.
I know, it's nice, right? That's right.
So, people hear me, Lance, here all the time, but let's go around. Roka, where can people find you out there on the internet, man?
Yeah, so anyone can find me on Facebook, Matthew Roca, R-O-C-C-A, and you guys can follow my film stuff. You can watch my movie on Amazon Prime. It's Bullets, Fangs, and Dinner at 8, number 8.
Awesome. What about you, Truex?
Cool. Lois and Clark, the podcast, the Facebook, the Instagram, we're everywhere, man. Check us out.
All right. And Victoria.
Hey, you can listen to my podcast, Your Biggest Fangirl, on your favorite podcatcher, and then you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at YBFG Podcast.
Alrighty, guys. Well, it's been fun talking about the pilot, but looking forward to next time we talk about the equally creatively titled finale.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
The two titles like episodes of this show, back to back.
All of it? Do we have to watch every goddamn montage? Is that...
I have not watched this episode, I think, since it aired, all the way through. I've watched the Lex and I've watched the Lex scenes probably about 20 times on YouTube over the years, but I've never sat down and watched this start to finish. So, yes, finale is the number 8 episode.
It's
certainly didn't vote for it.
Guys,
I don't know which one of you fools did. We'll talk about that next time.
What are you doing to us,
Why is it
Matt?
On my list? Why do I have to watch it again, and why do I have to talk about it? But I do it for you, the listeners.
People voted for this.
Okay. So, anyway, people love the finale. I guess people love Lois and Clark not getting married. I guess that's their jam. So, anyway, that's our number 8 episode, so stay tuned next month for that.
I cannot wait.
So literally, guys, it should have been called Superman, am I right? But considering the finale we got... That would have been false advertising. But I'm going to save all that. I'm going to save all that for next time.
Wow.
Yay.
Can you feel that shade?
I like your version of the finale.
But until then, guys, always hold on to Smallville. 'Cause you're all I want. You're